Welcome to HorrorFatale.com, almost live, where sarcasm goes to the movies and snark watches TV, with your hosts, the Horror Fatale and the Diva Mummy.
Welcome to HorrorFatale.com, almost live. I'm your host, the Horror Fatale, bringing you this week's horror news, reviews, recaps, and information. I ask that you do us a favor. Please like and subscribe and give us a rating at iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, or whatever platform you might be listening to the cast on. That signifies the time for us to get into the horror community news. First story up is the Spooky Empire thrilled Tampa for the first time with the dark side. Spooky Empire, one of the most coveted and recognizable thriller conventions in the nation, hosted its much anticipated yearly fall convention from October 31st to November 3rd in a brand new city. Well, the city's not new, but it's a brand new city for the convention of Tampa, Florida. The dark side of Comic-Con, as they call themselves, invaded the Tampa Convention Center for what was the 17th year of the convention. Peter Maganelli, the co-founder of Spooky Empire, said, "Being in a new city after so many years in Orlando was a big change for us, and we weren't sure what to expect. We were wowed by the Tampa Convention Center's warm welcome, the loyal Spooky Empire fans who made their way over to the Bay, and by our new Tampa fans. We're excited to welcome even more people into the Spooky Empire family, and we are eager to take this momentum and make next year's event even bigger." The convention kicked off Halloween with the families dressed up as the Addams Family. Hits the theme music a little earlier. The Addams Family, the Scooby-Doo and the Mystery Gang, and they were joined, they all joined in for a trick-or-treating and children's costume contest. Special guests featured at the convention included Cassandra Peterson, Miss Elvira herself, legendary Bruce Campbell, Alex Cooper, Clive Barker, Ted Romani, Sam Romani, CJ Graham, and James Hong, among many other stars. The weekend was jam-packed with events like that were like standing room only for the Fantasy Super Cosplay Wrestling, the Spooky Empire Film Festival with over 200 short horror films and thrillers from around the world, costume contest, and the Return of the Zombie Walk took place on Friday morning, which called on all zombies to walk from Uplock Tampa Bay Visitor Center to the convention center doors. So I'm going to ask you again to watch this space as they announce they'll be headed back to Orlando for the mid-season convention, which will happen sometime in 2020, probably May, at the Wyndham Orlando Resort. Both places are really nice. I have family in Tampa, so I'm a little more partial to that, but Orlando's great because, you know, Disney World and all that, Epcot Center, Kissimmee, all that stuff. But Tampa's pretty cool, though. The second story from the horror world is Netflix wins horror package The Unsound from Shazam, Helmer, David F. Sandberg for Boom Studios, and Skylar James. In what was a competitive bidding war, Netflix landed the feature film rights to The Unsound, which will be based on the Boom Studios graphic novel by Cullen Baum and J.T. Cole. Shazam director David F. Sandberg is poised to return to the horror genre, where he helmed such favors as Lights Out, Didn't Love It, and Annabelle Creation. Also didn't love it. But they did make a lot of money for their respective studios, so I'm sure that had a lot to do with him being chosen. The script will be written by Skylar James, whose 29 Mole Street production company has landed atop the Blood List and Hit List. She is the co-creator and producer of a limited series for Pearl Street, Gregory Jacobs, and Endeavor Content. So I'm always happy when it's a female writer doing things. So girl, do you. I will support. This becomes the very first feature from Boom Studios, and that's taken place to the market since the Disney-Fox merger. If you haven't heard, The End Sound is a psychiatrist, is a book about a psychiatrist, well, graphic novel, about a psychiatrist that returns to the insane asylum where her mother once worked and is now a patient, hoping to quell a bloody wake of horror that's been unleashed. As she descends down the rabbit hole and discovers hard truths about her own past, she comes to understand the hospital is hiding its secrets of its own, and perhaps her and her mother have more in common than she realized. All this is reported in Deadline, and as more information becomes available, you know, watch this space. And by watch this space, you guys, I mean visit horrorfortale.com. The third news item is really not a news item, as a prompt for something that's going to happen in an upcoming podcast. But not seen since his original broadcast TV run of 1959 through 61. I know, we fell most of our times. Deadline makes home video debut. Not Deadline that you're thinking of, the website that currently has information and news. No, no, no. Deadline, the reality TV show. It actually was a forerunner to reality television. Lost and forgotten in a New Jersey garage for more than 50 years, the Deadline television series, which aired from 1959 to 1961, dramatized stories ripped from real-life newspaper headlines of the 50s, has been rediscovered and is making its way to home video, DVD. I don't know. I guess they were trying to keep it authentic by calling it a video, but home DVD. The cult TV classic in a 39-episode 3-disc collector set features such iconic actors in their youth as Paul Stewart as the narrator, Peter Falk, Diane Ladd, George Maharis, and Robert Lansing. The only names I gotta admit that I recognize are, of course, Peter Falk. You guys may remember him. He was a trench coat-wearing detective. His show was before my time, but I think I caught it like on syndication. It might have even been on TV Land at one point. It's Columbo, by the way. Diane Ladd is, she's an actress. You'll recognize her. She's blonde. She's the mother of a very famous actress that her name has escaped me right now. But those were the only two names that I recognize. And I probably should have looked it up. But the unearthing of former episodes in true crime intrigued me. So when I saw this release, when I got this release in my email, I was like, I'm in. So I have access to a screener. So I'm going to watch some of it and tell you guys about it because it sounds really cool. There will be a complete post, which will make way more sense to what I'm trying to say, up on horrorfortale.com today. And I'm going to watch, like I said, a few episodes and tell you guys more closer to the November 19th release date. Never, never, guys, eat pasta before you record a podcast because you will be very tired and punchy. But let's keep pushing.
As the attorney representing Adrian's trust, I'm required to read a prepared statement. Cecilia, although our relationship was far from perfect, I thought that you would talk to me rather than run away.
Are you okay? What happened to him?
He cut his wrists. Per his final wishes, you're getting $5 million. Contingent, of course, on the fine print.
He can't be ruled to be mentally incompetent.
It just doesn't make any sense.
What?
Adrian wouldn't kill himself.
Listen, you're getting your freedom back, okay? Don't let him haunt you.
Hello? I'm scared.
You don't have to be scared of him anymore.
He was a sociopath, completely in control of everything. He said that wherever I went, he would find me, walk right up to me, and I wouldn't be able to see him.
Are you okay?
Someone sitting in that chair.
prove what I'm experiencing.
You need help.
Adrian is dead. I went to his house today.
He's not dead.
I have a pile of ashes in a box that would disagree with you.
He has figured out a way to be invisible.
Only thing more brilliant than inventing something that makes you invisible is coming up with the perfect way to torture you, even in death. Adrian's true genius was how he got in people's heads.
Don't come any closer. Hey!
I'm not crazy. Please listen to me.
You're saying the person trying to kill you is in the room right now, but we can't see him?
Is he listening? Where are you?
Where are you? Show yourself! Come on! Do it!
There you are.
Actually, that really is an ooh. That what you just heard is the official trailer for the upcoming The Invisible Man remake. And you guys, again, visit horrorfatale.com to see the entire trailer for yourself. But I will just tell you, it looks really great. I am fascinated with this movie already. It basically reminds me of the 90s remakes of two films kind of merged into one. One is, it has that Sleeping with the Enemy vibe, the Julia Roberts movie from back in the day. Look it up. It's actually a pretty good film. I'm a big Julia Roberts fan anyway, but it's a really good film. It's one of her earlier, yeah, it's kind of early for her. I think she was still really young when she did it, but she had a homicidal psychopath of a husband, and she fakes her own death and all of that. The house from in this film kind of even reminds you of the house that her Julia Roberts and her husband lived in. I'm almost certain that might be have been on purpose. Whoever was doing the staging and the location scouting, that might have been on purpose. And not only the sleeping with the enemy comes about, but if you look at it even closely, it also has a serious Hollow Man, the Kevin Bacon film from also from the 90s, which, not only did it have Kevin Bacon, it had Josh Brolin and I'm blanking her name, the girl from Karate Kid, and she's Elizabeth Shue. There you go. And some other, actors as well are also in that film, and I really liked Hollow Man as well, especially for the time period. The CGI was pretty damn good, and they did a really good job. Of course, this movie coming up, this Invisible Man is light years ahead, because technology's come so far. But I think that was, I want to say Invisible Man was maybe 1999. I can't remember. It may have been earlier than. I might have still been in college when that film came out. So, I'm telling my age. But this looks really, really good. And let's talk about this trailer. I've made enough references to the past. This Invisible Man stars Elizabeth Moss, who you know from, she was in Us, the Jordan Peele movie, this summer, and she was in Hulu's The Handmaid. She's in The Handmaid's Tale. And I completely forgot about that show. It got really, really depressing. But Elizabeth Moss is really good, as you might know. They're calling it a terrifying modern tale from a classic monster character, inspired by a classic monster character. I get it. They're using the title, but I'm telling you, it's Sleeping with the Enemy and Hollow Man have a baby, I'm telling you. Elizabeth Moss stars as Cecilia Cass, who's trapped in a violent, controlling relationship with a wealthy and brilliant scientist. She escapes in the dead of night and disappears into hiding, aided by her sister, who's played by Harriet Dreyer. She's from The In-Between, the recently canceled In-Between. Their childhood friend, Aldous Hodge, who is very hot. He's in Straight Outta Compton, and their teenage daughter, Storm Reed, from HBO's Utopia. I think she was also in that horrible movie. Let me stop. I'm not gonna name it. But when Cecilia's abusive ex, who's played by Oliver Jackson Cohn, who was in The Haunting of Hill House, yeah, I remember him. He's one of the brothers, I think. Commits suicide and leaves her a generous portion, as you heard in the trailer, a generous portion. Yeah, he left her $5 million. Cecilia suspects his death was a hoax, as a series of eerie coincidences turns lethal, threatening the lives of the one she loves. Cecilia's sanity begins to unravel, and she desperately tries to prove that she is being haunted by somebody no one can see. And once again, this is from our friends over at Blumhouse, produced by Jason Blum for Blumhouse Productions. And this incarnation of the Invisible Man has been written and directed and executive produced by Lee Wynum, and one of the original conceivers of the Saw franchise, and directed, she recently directed Upgrade and Insidious Chapter 3. This film is slated to be released on February 28th, 2020. I'm really tight-tongued right now. But you guys, seriously, go check out the trailer. It's one of the best trailers I think I've seen in a while. I'm hoping that they didn't give us the entirety of the movie. I hate when they do that. But it's a good trailer.
When I was a kid, there was a place. A dark place. They closed it down and let it rot. But the things that lived there. They come back.
Not many ride the bus this far north. You're running away from something?
I'm running away from myself, I guess.
Hi. You can hear me. You're magic. Like me.
I don't know about magic. I always called it the Shining. The world is a hungry place, a dangerous place.
These people, they hurt people like us.
These empty devils, they'll eat what shines. And they've noticed that little girl.
Well, hi there.
They're coming. Where are we going?
There's a place. You sure you want to do this?
I'm ready.
Yes, you run, dear. And then I will find you. And you will scream for years.
Was the trailer for Stephen King's Dr. Sleep, which you've probably guessed is today's movie review. Okay, first off, I just want to say that I had the great pleasure of seeing this film early because I had a screening pass. And I watched it a while ago, and it really took me a little bit of a time to sit down and actually write the review. The review is already up. It was posted on Thursday. Today's actually Friday, but it was posted Thursday in its entirety. So you know what I want you to do. Go read the actual written review over at horrorfatale.com. Let's get into it. Let's just go ahead and do it. This film was directed by Mike Flanagan. by Mike Flanagan, and it's of course based on the book by Stephen King, but Mike Flanagan not only directed this, he's also the screenwriter for this particular incarnation of the book. He actually, like I said, wrote the screenplay, so he's responsible for bringing it, you know, to life. And Mike Flanagan has directed things like The Haunting of Hill House, which I previously mentioned, Gerald's Game, Hush. You know, I might be. Yeah, let's see. I'm trying to think of. He did Ouija, The Origin of Evil, Before I Wake. Let's see, Oculus, Abstentia, just a ton but quite a few bigger name horror movies in the genre. And I just gotta be really honest, I only liked the Haunting of Hill House and Gerald's Game, and I think those were just primarily based on being a fan of both of those authors, the original authors. Because I hate to say this. Okay, let's just do it. Like I said in my review, this film, although it's gorgeous, it's stunning. It really is. And the cinematographer for this movie is, I want to give him credit as well. I did in the review. I'm trying to find his name. Michael Fumagalli. I should look up his work as well. But it's gorgeous. It's like they did such a good job with the shots, and it's one. Oh, okay, yeah, he'd worked with him before. Okay, I get it now. Totally makes sense. He also did The Haunting of Hill House as well, and it looks like he did Replica. I was trying to see if it was the Replica that just came out with. No, it hasn't come out yet. Okay, I thought it was the Replica that just came out with Keanu Reeves, but it's not. Anyway, so I have to give it kudos for being, you know, just gorgeous. And the problem with the film is that it's really, really beautiful. Like I keep repeating, but it's, you guys, it's not the least bit scary. and you're gonna find that really, you're gonna be disappointed and let down if you go into this movie thinking you're gonna be scared. If you're a horror fan, I should put it that way. If you're a horror fan, if you're listening to this podcast, you're a horror fan, and we want our scary. And this is kind of the second time I think this summer that I've sat through films and not been scared. Just like chapter two, it's gorgeous. Like, one more time, but not the least big scary. Now, having said that part, it's still a really good movie and definitely worth watching. So let's just do a little bit of it. I got that out of the way. I'll let you know how pretty it is. It's also really impressive that what he did was try to, and I got to apologize because I have not read Dr. Sleep. A friend of mine just finished it today, and I'm probably going to get her to, if she will, to do a review for Horror Fatale on it. I'm going to try. She may not want to. But anyway, but what I have done is read the Stephen King version of The Shining. So I understand that Dr. Sleep, the book, is a follow-up to Stephen King's version of The Shining and not necessarily Stanley Kubrick's version of The Shining, which, as you know, if you're a horror fan or a fan of that, you know, of The Shining in general, you already know that Kubrick's version of The Shining was completely different than what King intended in the book or whatever. So I give Michael Flanagan props, because what he attempted to do was kind of bridge the gap or merge those two different visions together. And in a lot of ways, he succeeded, but in some parts, it didn't have the proper feel. And you know, I'm unsure to know what he was allowed to put directly from, you know, the original Shining, Kubrick's version of The Shining, into his film. I don't know if he was allowed to even do that. I don't know what kind of liberties he was allowed to take with Kubrick's work. But he did a pretty good job of trying to intertwine those things. One of the things that stood out to me that I thought was really good, there is a very distinct heartbeat that occurs in the Kubrick version of The Shining that, you know, it indicates when they're shining, right? So what Flanagan tries to do in his film, he repurposed that and he brought it in as well. The only thing that was interesting, well, it was really kind of interesting, because that part does make you anxious or whatever. So that works really, really well, because every time, you know, you hear that heartbeat, you're knowing, uh-oh, something's bad about to happen. So that works well. Let's see. The main villain in this film, I should say, is Rose the Hat. And she's leader of the True Knot gang, or guess they're calling themselves. They're like this cult. And what they do is they go from place to place finding children that have the shine, which, you know, as we know from Dick Halloran, he and Danny had. And so they've been doing it for years. And for some reason, if they take that shine from you into their bodies, it makes them immortal. Yeah, I know. And so they're led by Rose the Hat or whatever. And so and we start the beginning of the film off, and I'm not going to spoil you guys. Trust me, I don't do that. But we start off, we meet Danny Torrance, like, I guess about 30 years later, it's supposed to be. And he's played by Ewan McGregor, the gorgeous Ewan McGregor. And he's, you know, Ewan McGregor's such a good actor, so there, I have no complaints about that. He embodied the you know, character well. And it was also good to, you know, find out kind of what happened to Danny and his mother after the events at the Overlook, and we get a little bit of that. Flanagan also tries to intertwine, I don't know if that's the right word, or intertwine the old with the new. So we get many flashbacks. And so what he did was try to recreate a lot of that original stuff again, because I don't know what he was able to use and what he couldn't use. And one of the things he did was he did a really good thing. This young lady that plays Danny's mother is Alex Esco, and she plays Wendy Torrance. And they did a really good casting her, because she has that Shelley Duvall. She kind of looks like Shelley Duvall. And when you were first introduced to her, you hear Shelley Duvall's voice. So I'm thinking that they tweaked her voice, and, you know, I'm almost positive they did that, because she sounded a lot like Shelley Duvall when she was speaking. So you're hearing Shelley Duvall's, you know, words come out of this different face. It's a little jarring and a little off-putting, because you remember, wait a minute, that's not Shelley Duvall. And they did it again, of course, with, you know, Jack Nicholson a little bit, but then they were intertwined in footage of Jack Nicholson. It was a little much, you know, but I get what he was trying to do, and kudos for trying to do that. We also get a new Dick Halloran, which this, for some reason, he's played by Carl Lumbly, and that didn't bother me as much. I think because, like I said in the written review, I always felt that Dick Halloran got a raw deal. Think about it. He got a raw deal. He did all of that to get back to the Overlook, and first scene, he walks in the door, and he's gone. Ugh. You know, so to get any rendition of that character return was a good day. It's like I said, it's completely beautiful. It's a great entertaining film. And if you're a fan of The Shining in any incarnation, this is definitely one to watch. But if you're expecting, you know, horror, this ain't it. To me, it's not even a thriller, actually. I don't want to call it, I don't know, it really, I don't know how it got an R rating. I guess because, you know, we do see Danny do some blow and hang out with a hooker or two, and you know, early on in the film. So perhaps that's what's up, the reason why it got an R rating. But there shouldn't have been an R rating. PG-13. All the way with this. The final act you will really enjoy, because literally we get to go back to the Overlook, and you know, the gang's all there, you know, the twin girls, the creepy lady in room 237, even the death maze is still there. Lloyd the bartender shows up for a little bit. And he's also played by Henry Thomas, who plays Jack Nicholson's Jack Torrance as well. I'm not real sure. I'm sure there was a point to that. It wasn't made very clear. I think Flanagan was having, you know, how their whole documentaries and studies just on, you know, things from The Shining. So I think that's what he was trying to do with this. And I'm not real sure that this will be one that'll be dissected. I gave it 3 stars, and I'm gonna stick with the 3 stars. It's one of those films where I feel like it deserves a second and a third watch before you sufficiently say whether you like it or not. And like I said, this is definitely one where I think you should all see it. And it's definitely a second or a third watch. And mind you, when you watch it a second, a third time, that it's really long. And I think that might have been an issue as well. It's 30 minutes longer than The Shining. And you remember, The Shining's really freaking long. This was 2 hours and 30 minutes. And I really think we could have shaved off the last 30 minutes and went on with life. For what it's worth. But I'm going to stick with 3 stars, and I'm going to tell you to see it. And the complete written and better cohesive version of my review is currently up on harfatale.com. And Dr. Sleep is currently in a theater near you. And if you haven't guessed, that is the theme music for American Horror Story 1984. And this is going to be really quick because we've already went over our allotted time. I just want to say that we're coming to the end. There's only one more episode in the season. And I gotta say, the last two episodes of the show have been very boring and slow. They killed, what's the group? Kiki Google? I can't pronounce the name of that group. I could never pronounce the name of the group, even when I was little. The group, you know, he made the theme from Never End a Story, you know, big part of our lives, that guy. But he was in a whole other singing group. And, you know, in on the show, all of them are dead. That was kind of fun. But mostly we're getting to the end. So they're setting up the season finale, which I hope has more thunder than what's been happening. I don't want to spoil in case you haven't watched the show just yet. But they've had, I'm hoping that wasn't the end of Mr. Jangles' storyline, but they really, 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 really remade Friday the 13th for this particular episode. I'm sorry, guys. I'm playing with my puppy. My puppy woke up from her nap and decided she wanted to be on the podcast. Anyway, they decided to really do it. I mean, literally, they had a character to come up out of the river, out of the boat, and grab one of the characters and pull them into the lake. I literally tweeted, what in the Friday the 13th hell is this? You know, so they're setting, everybody's back now at the, you know, at the campsite. Richard Ramirez is there. Mr. Jangles is there. Brooke, you know, her newfound freedom, she decided to take her ass back to the camp. Let's see, who else is there? Oh, and Dylan McDermott is playing some kind of psychopath. We don't even know. I haven't yet to figure out what character he's supposed to be. If this is this based on a real person, or, you know, is this some rando that they wrote into the show? But he's there too. So, like I said, the next show will be the finale. So hopefully we'll see how it freaking all ends. Right now, it's kind of like it was so soap opera-y. This particular episode, if you watch it, you know what I'm talking about. Montana and what's his face had sex, and he knows she's dead, and he was perfectly okay. I guess he was having his ghost moment, literally. And you know, he basically was like, kill me so we can be together forever. I didn't even think they were together that long. I don't remember. They didn't set that up well enough, because it was only like they went, remember at the beginning of the show, they went skinny dipping that one time, and I'm like, really? You fell that in love? All right, Montana. You go, girl. I'm trying to think of anything else. It's two back-to-back boring episodes. So that's all I'll say on that. I just wanted you guys to hear my thoughts in case you have any. I might be the only person still watching that freaking show, because they started off with a bang and it just slid down from there. Checking in with my Nancy Drew show. It's getting really good. Good news for it. They picked it up for a full 22-episode season. I didn't love this particular week's episode either. They did a whole Charmed thing. And I get it. They literally, you know, had her, one of the characters, George, possessed. And they did the Four Corners. And yeah, okay. Her mom's cool, though. I like her mom's character. It's funny to me. Next week, I have something really, really good happening for the podcast. I'm very excited. I hope it works out and I do this interview justice. But I ask you to tune in then. And for this week, I'm going to ask you to follow me on Twitter at Horror Fatale, or at the Instagram at The Horror Fatale. And I'll just sign off and tell you guys, have some very good nightmares.